So continuing the reflection about conditionality, and in particular, what we've been exploring, the conditions that support freedom, support the mind moving in the direction of ease and peace, support letting go of the way the minds get hooked by its habits and patterns. So the conditions that actually support that, the teaching of transcendent dependent origination that the Buddha offered, which in contrast in a way to the usual teaching of dependent origination, which describes how we get caught by our habits and patterns, the kind of the familiar ways that we get hooked by craving and by greed and aversion, and identities get formed and hooked to, and we suffer. This teaching on transcendent dependent origination actually is connected to this, the teaching of dependent origination, in that the Buddha pointed to the suffering that arises out of the usual habits and patterns of our mind. That suffering is the condition that when met with hearing a particular, hearing a teaching, and even what I said a few minutes ago, that there's a possibility of a way that would lead to letting go of those habits and patterns. That's a condition. That's a condition that can support an interest in engagement. If that teaching also includes some things that we can do, some actions we can take, there may be some interest. And so the teaching of transcendent dependent origination is not completely separate from the teaching about how suffering arises, in that the foundational link of transcendent dependent origination is suffering met by confidence or faith that there is a way out of suffering. And so suffering is actually the, we can say that suffering is a supportive condition for freedom when suffering is met with wisdom, with faith. So this teaching on transcendent dependent origination, we've been talking about it for some weeks now, and the first part of it is really, you could say, a set of supportive conditions for the mind to be able to settle down. So the first few links are, there's suffering at start, and then faith. Faith leads to delight. And so those three, I mean, that there's a little bit of a settling that happens right there, that with the actual meeting of suffering and hearing a teaching, that there is a possibility for some other way, and that there are actions that we can take. Sometimes the mind can begin to settle a little bit, like, oh, maybe there's something different. I know my mind kind of settled a little bit when I heard this teaching and then began to engage. The engagement is an important part. As I began to engage and I saw how it worked, there was even more settling. I saw that there was this possibility of actually meeting the struggles in my mind and seeing something different happen, seeing more space around it, seeing letting go at times, even letting go of habits and patterns of mind just through the mindfulness itself. All of this led to delight and joy, some of these links that are on the supportive conditions for freedom, supportive conditions in this list of transcendent dependent arising. So faith kind of engages us to act, to be inspired, to step on the path and follow some of the instructions. Pay attention to your body and mind. Be mindful, be aware, curious about the experience as experience in the present moment. And quite naturally with that, there will be a little bit of settling and some delight and joy, tranquility of mind, even happiness. So these are the first part of the chain of transcendent dependent origination really points to the mind that begins to settle down and have a little bit more ease. It's not the final ease. It's not the ease of fully letting go of our habits and patterns of mind, but it's kind of the ease of knowing that there's a way, knowing that there's a path, and the happiness of that, and the happiness of at times having some freedom from our habits and patterns. And then getting caught again, and then practicing some more, and then feeling some more release. And so there's this kind of development of these qualities of mind. And all of this settling that happens does create support, a concentration of mind, a stability of mind. The word concentration often, we have a relationship with that word often, I think, that feels a little bit focused or sometimes tight, or concentration we often think of as being directed right at one thing. But this concentration of the path, while it can have that quality of being focused right at one thing, there's also a kind of concentration that's more just a stability of mind that is not pulled out into reactivity, but is able to stay present with what is happening in the present moment. And so this concentration is understood to be a result of, it's supported by the earlier conditions of delight, of joy, of happiness and tranquility. All of those support this mind that begins to settle and stabilize. And that mind that begins to settle and stabilize can begin to meet experience in a different way. Instead of its habitual ways, instead of its familiar ways of reacting to something that's happening, a mind with stability is more available to just know, oh, this is what's happening right now. And doesn't get pulled out into the reactivity. So there's a stability of mind that is not reacting to what is happening in our experience. This concentrated mind, the mind that is stable, is able to start seeing experience in a completely different way. As we talked about last time, the link following concentration, or the next step in this process of moving in the direction of freedom, is that the concentrated mind supports seeing things as they are, seeing experience as it actually is, which is not actually our usual way of meeting experience. Normally, when we meet experience, I mentioned this last time, we're meeting experience through our conditioned perspective of how we have habitually responded or reacted to what's happening. And so something unpleasant arises. Typically, we want to get rid of it. It's not simply, oh, there's something unpleasant arising. That's what's happening in the present moment. Oh, it's a impermanent, unreliable experience. It's coming, it's going. That's not how we usually relate to an unpleasant experience. We normally try to do something to get rid of it. And so the mind that's concentrated is more able to simply be with something, know that it's unpleasant, know that it's an arising experience, and then also begin to see its nature, which is an impermanent experience, so that it passes away. So the concentrated mind can start to meet experience not through our habits and patterns of reactivity, not through our habits of frustration or confusion or anger or wanting things to be a certain way. Instead, there's this kind of interest and curiosity. What is actually happening? What is the experience that's actually happening? And beginning to get or taste the flavor of these experiences as impermanent, unreliable, and not self. So this is we talked about this some last week, the movement towards not last week, the week before, the movement towards the mind that's stable, meeting experience in a new way, we start to see the nature of experience. And that impermanent, unreliable nature of experience, when we recognize that experience is changing all the time, there is nothing that lasts for very long. When we start to see that, there is a very natural movement of mind. And so this is kind of the next step in the chain, that's a natural movement of mind to recognize that if something is impermanent and unreliable, it doesn't make any sense to hold on to it. And this clinging, the clinging to wanting something to go away if it's unpleasant, or wanting to hold on to something if it's pleasant, that's a very natural human process of mind. It's something that we have all done. The Buddha described it 2,600 years ago as a process that humans tend to share. And yet he pointed to it also as based on that tendency to cling, that tendency to want to push away something that's pleasant or hold on to something that's pleasant. That tendency is based on basically a mistaken perception that what's happening has a permanent and reliable nature to it. And so, you know, we want to push away or get rid of something that's unpleasant, partly because we don't understand that it is impermanent and it will naturally fall apart. We want to hold on to something that's pleasant, thinking that we can keep it, not understanding that it will fall apart and that we will suffer when that thing goes away, when we've tried to hold on to it. So we have all these views in the mind that tend to propel us into this direction of holding on to things, this craving that the Buddha talked about, wanting things to be a certain way, wanting unpleasant things to go away, pleasant things to stay. It's not a problem when unpleasant things go away. It's the wanting that is where the suffering catches us. The wanting and the action based on that wanting. When we start to look at in our experience the quality of the mind that is happening when we are in that state of wanting or aversion, we see that experience in that moment is already painful. It's already suffering. And so that's another way the mind begins to learn, this is not useful. This clinging, this holding on is not useful. It's not a helpful direction for the mind that is moving in the direction of ease and peace. And so the mind begins to learn through this concentrated mind, the stability of concentration, supports us being able to see the impermanent, unreliable nature of experience. We start to see everything, you know, all experiences this way. There's nothing that we experience that is outside of this truth. Impermanent, unreliable, not self. And as the mind starts to see that, it begins to let go. It begins to let go of wanting to crave and cling. Partly too, we begin to see the mistaken understandings that have been active the belief that if I get this thing, it'll make me happy. If I get rid of this thing, it will make me happy. You know, there's those beliefs underlie the movement to want to get rid of and hold on to. So greed and aversion are kind of underpinned by this belief that getting rid of that thing will make me happy, or holding on to that thing will make me happy. And what we see with the concentrated mind, we see that the holding on is creating suffering itself. The wanting to push away is creating suffering itself. And so right in the moment of doing that, there's already not ease and peace. And so the mind begins, with the concentrated mind, the mind begins to understand the misunderstandings that have led it to craving, clinging, aversion. So the mind begins to get disenchanted by its habitual tendencies. It begins to recognize, yeah, that way, you know, that habitual way, I saw this so clearly around anger, you know, the movement of mind to get angry, and having seen for several months before that, really observing anger, having seen how painful it was to have anger arising in my experience, seeing the mind kind of moving towards anger, it's like, wow, that way lies suffering. Yeah, not so helpful. And the mind letting it go. You know, it's like the mind gets disenchanted with those habits and patterns. Those habits and patterns have developed because we didn't know any other way. And in fact, most of what we're taught, most of how we learn is to follow those habits and patterns. So there's not a lot of information out there as we're growing up that points us in another direction. You know, there's not a lot of helpful pointers to how not to crave and cling and act out of aversion and act out of anger. So we start to understand a little bit that there's a kind of a mistaken idea, an ignorance or a delusion that's underlying our habits and patterns. And this is another part of seeing things as they are. Another piece of the mind seeing clearly. We see the impermanent nature of experience. We see the unreliable nature of experience. And we see the mistaken way that we have attributed permanence and attributed reliability to experience. And so this disenchantment with our habits and patterns, it's kind of a process, I would say. You know, sometimes as we start to see the nature of things as they are, as we enter into a place of being able to be with things just coming and going, sometimes there's quite a bit of like relief or release or a sense of ease or delight in just seeing, wow, you know, I don't have to do anything. Things just come and go. And there's a lot of ease and peace in that place. So sometimes there's a kind of a sense of ease or peace when we meet those truths. There's a way that when we recognize the impermanent nature of experience and the mind doesn't want to cling to anything, that it can be very delightful. Some more space around the experience, that the habitual tendencies of mind aren't quite as active. But there's some very deep, really, really deep ways that our conditioning in our human system seems to rebel against the truth of impermanent, unreliable, that everything is impermanent and unreliable. You know, the mind just, it doesn't quite want to admit that. it kind of feels like, well, okay, well, all of this stuff is impermanent, but there's got to be something. There's got to be some place to land. There's got to be some place where I can just rest and just not have to work anymore. You know, just some place where I can land and just stay there. There's got to be something like that. And when we may at some points even think we find something like that. I've definitely seen that in my meditation experience. Sometimes the mind will search for a kind of a meditative place or a kind of a place of ease or peace, and it lands there and thinks, oh, this is it. Oh, I figured it out. Oh, this place of ease, this is what they're talking about. And it lasts for, oh, it may last for a few minutes, or it might last for a few seconds, or it might last, sometimes it can last for a day even, but it usually goes away. And then we're back where we were, and we see, oh, I had thought I'd found it. I thought I had it. I thought I'd found a place where everything was okay. And that too, that turned out to be impermanent, unreliable. As we touch into these truths with this concentrated mind, as we touch into these truths that things are impermanent, things are unreliable, there's a way that the mind kind of rebels against these truths. So sometimes we feel some ease and peace with the letting go around seeing them, but it's not that simple, at least in my experience. It's kind of a bumpy ride at a certain point when we really start to touch into that things are impermanent and unreliable. You know, we touch into that truth of impermanent and unreliable, and it feels really vulnerable. We start to begin to understand there isn't any place to land. And the mind just kind of says, no, that can't be true. I don't like that. I don't want to feel vulnerable all the time. The fact that we are vulnerable as human beings is a truth. We don't like that truth. We don't like the truth of our own mortality. And so there's kind of like some emotional responses that happen at a human level, at a very deep human level, to beginning to see these truths. And so concentration begins to start to help us to see things as they are. And that sounds lovely, seeing things as they are. You know, oh, if I see things as they are, then everything will be great. But it's more of a process than that, because our system is so, it is so counterintuitive to our system that things are impermanent and unreliable, that our system really rebels at very deep levels. Sometimes there's kind of emotional responses to this. The vulnerability is one of them. This sense of really just having a vulnerability and then feeling fear connected to that vulnerability. That's a kind of an emotional response that can happen with the seeing of the impermanent nature of experience. This is part of our path. We will go through this. Sometimes when this happens, people attribute some of these emotional responses to, oh, I must be, you know, it must be from something when I was a kid. And it's definitely, things can be connected to old habits and patterns of fear, anxiety. And it may be that at this point in practice, when we start touching into the vulnerability, the unreliability, that some of our deepest old habits and patterns kind of rear their heads again. Even if we've kind of worked through them in some ways, it's like, oh, really? It's that impermanent? Oh, it's that unreliable? And our old habits and patterns of wanting some safety come in, wanting some security, wanting to hold on. So that happens for us as the practice deepens. And so this is a kind of a bumpy place in practice. And so I say this, I bring this in, I mean, partly because it's here on this path, on the path, you know, it points to this and this teaching of transcendent dependent arising, this point of disenchantment. Now, disenchantment might sound too like, you know, okay, you know, you see through it, the enchantment gets burst, the illusion gets burst, and then everything's cool. But it's not quite that easy either. It's like we fight that enchantment being seen through. And so there's a lot of emotional responses here. The fear that around our safety is a big one. But then there's some other ones too. You know, there can be a flavor. One that resonated for me was homesickness, a feeling kind of you know, our habits and patterns feel kind of familiar and comfortable, you know, that's like, oh yeah. I mean, even if we know if it's difficult or unpleasant, it's like, oh yeah, this pattern of not liking things and wanting to fix things and change things. You know, I see that it causes some stress, but it's so familiar. It's kind of like an old bathrobe that's really comfortable. And, you know, it's torn and tattered, but I don't care. It's like, it feels good, even if it's stress or suffering. And so, you know, when we start seeing through those habits and patterns, it's like putting on that old bathrobe. It doesn't feel so good anymore. It's not working the way it used to work, those old habits and patterns. We feel the suffering of it more. And we feel a little bereft of some place to find comfort. Those patterns and habits were a form of comfort for us. And so this place in practice is a place where we lose some of those places of comfort, potentially before we really have other the concentration can be a place where there can be a little bit of landing in a different kind of ease. You know, the experience of concentration can sometimes give us some relief in this place, but sometimes what we're getting to see is the dukkha of the way our habits and patterns and work, the dukkha of the impermanent, the dukkha of the unreliability. And our old habits and patterns are so thoroughly understood to be not helpful. That feeling of homesickness can be there. That feeling of, oh, I want to go back there, but it doesn't work anymore. There isn't that home to go back to. That's a feeling that can happen here. Sometimes it can be a feeling of overwhelm because it's like, wow, there's so many things changing and there's nothing reliable. There's no place to land. It just feels overwhelming. So there's a lot of different relationships that can happen at this place. And the path of practice lies in knowing that those are happening. It's the same kind of practice that we've been doing all along. It's no different. What we get to do in those moments is recognize, wow, things are impermanent and the mind doesn't like it. There's fear, or there's this feeling of feeling bereft. That's what's happening in this moment. The path of practice unfolds through meeting our relationship to not liking that impermanent, unreliable nature of experience. And it's a bumpy ride. It is a bumpy ride. It feels challenging. Sometimes this part of practice is called the dark night of the soul. You know, you kind of want to give up in a way, you know, it's so hard, but you know, it's kind of hard to give up at this point because the homesickness, you know, it's like the old strategies don't work anymore. So the only way through it is to keep going. And the way through it is really just to meet whatever is here in the moment, whatever reaction is happening in relationship to seeing these truths of impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable experience.